Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, and my throat's a little bit sore, and that's why the audio quality of the commentary will not be as good as the audio quality of the show this week. I want to encourage everybody, got any comments, send it to box13 at greatdetectives.net. Please cast your vote for the show over at Podcast Alley, podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. Thank you for all the votes so far this month. We've been pretty consistently in the top 30. If you've not cast your vote for us, please do so. Also, please fill out our survey, survey.radiodragnet.com. Thanks to everybody who's filled it out so far. I hope we can get it up to about 100. We're at about 80 right now. Got an email from Billy who writes, can you explain this? The other day, I purchased a volume of Dragnet TV episodes from my local dollar store. I was very excited to get 3 episodes of the television show, The Big Crime, Shoplift, and Girl, for only $1. After a few seconds of viewing the first episode, I realized something was wrong. The original music was missing and replaced by some current New Age synth. We quickly switched between the dialogue and this new music. The trademark Dragnet music was nowhere to be found on this DVD, as well as the interspatial music between scenes. What is up with this? Perhaps your vast knowledge of this fantastic show could shed some light upon this for me. Thanks, and keep up the great work with your Dragnet episode, my wife, and I thoroughly enjoy your critique of each episode. And that's from Bill in Millbrook, New York. Well, Bill, the answer, as best I can tell, is it has to do with concerns of paying royalties to the owners of the Dragnet theme, the family of Walter Schumann. Now, whether this is something that is very clearly mandated in law, or whether it's something that companies do to remain in compliance, I couldn't say. I know there are some sets that have the music, and I don't know whether they paid royalties to include the music, or if they just don't see the same compliance risk. But a company that's doing dollar DVDs, it's generally, they're probably going to play it careful, and if they figure they might have to pay royalties, it'd just be cheaper to for them rather than risking a lawsuit or, you know, having to, you know, press their case in court, just to go ahead and to include something else. But New Agey, yeah, that doesn't really work with Dragnet, so... All right, a few more basic shout-outs. Always fond of Dragnet. This is from Podcast Alley Comments from R. Roth. Still loving the show, says Natalie, and keep up the great work, Adam. And that's it for this part of the show. We have a few more we'll save for after the break. Before we get started, I just want to remind you, a great way to support the show as you make your travel plans for the new year, just remember this simple name, JohnnyDollarAir.com. This takes you to Priceline, where you can always name your own price on hotels, airline tickets, and more, as well as being able to search for publicly listed deals on airlines and hotel stays and rental cars. And the great thing is that if you go to JohnnyDollarAir.com, and you make travel arrangements, we'll get we'll get a commission on that. So just remember that as you make your travel plans. Go to JohnnyDollarAir.com, JohnnyDollarAir.com, and make a reservation. All right. The title of this week's episode is The Big Roll. We'll go ahead and listen, and then we'll come back.
The story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. An unidentified man is abducted from a downtown street. The scene is checked where the man was reported taken. Bloodstains are found on the sidewalk. The abductors escaped in a gray sedan. No one saw the license number. Your job? Get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, March 18th. It was overcast in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Lorman. My name's Friday. It was 6:48 p.m. when we got to the corner of 11th and South Pierce Street, the 797 Club.
Sorry, no more service tonight. Closing up.
Your name, Leon Morley?
Yeah, I can't serve you any drinks, so closing up.
Police officers, Mr. Morley. I'd like to talk to you a minute, if you don't mind.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought maybe you were after a drink.
We were just talking to the officers in the radio car up the street, the car that answered the call out here tonight. They told us you were one of the people who saw what happened.
Well, yeah, I guess I did. I saw part of it anyway. Lousy deal kind of thing makes your ulcers pop. That's why I'm closing down early, going home.
We're following through on the investigation, Mr. Morley. I'd like to have you tell us everything you know about it, if you would, everything that you saw.
I told the cops in the radio car everything I know. It was about 6 o'clock, and I heard this big commotion out in the street. I didn't know what it was. Sounded like somebody was hurt. I went out and took a look. Marie in the beauty shop next door, she was outside rubbernecking, too. She saw as much as I did. You talked to her?
Yes, sir, we have. She wasn't too clear on some of the details. Maybe you can straighten it out for us.
I'm glad to, if I can. What do you want to know?
You mind telling us in your own words just exactly how it happened? I mean, how you saw it?
Well, there's not an awful lot to it. I was working behind a bar here, and it was around 6 o'clock, like I say, maybe a couple of minutes after. I was just fixing up a round of drinks for some fellows when I heard this noise outside.
Yeah.
Didn't know what it was at first. It sounded like somebody screaming, like they were hurt.
You said you heard this commotion outside the bar about 6 o'clock.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I didn't go out right then. I finished mixing the round of drinks. First, I thought the racket was just a couple of early drunks, but it kept on. Man screaming. It got louder, and I decided to take a look.
Mm-hmm.
I went out and looked down the street a couple of doors, down toward the corner.
Which corner is that, Mr. Morley?
The nearest one, down to the left. Here, I'll show you.
All right, fine.
I didn't know what was happening. It was a terrible sound. Man screaming at the top of his lungs.
You recognize who the man was?
No, I didn't. Never saw him before. Didn't get too good a look at him anyway. It was getting kind of dark. Here, let me show you. Over here by the window.
All right, fine.
I see it was right down there, just next to that mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
These two guys had a hold of the man who was screaming. They were trying to drag him into a car, a gray sedan. The man was trying to fight him off.
Can you describe any of these three men for us?
No, I couldn't be sure about it. Like I say, it was getting kind of dark. Well, you can see for yourself they were about 75 or 100 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
This man they were trying to drag into the car, he kept screaming, "Leave me alone, you can have the money. Leave me alone, you can have my car." Looked like he was hurt to me, blood on his clothes.
Didn't anybody try to help him?
Well, you know how this neighborhood is. When there's trouble, they all cut out. They don't want to get involved. It happened pretty fast anyway. These two guys got this man in the back seat of the car, and the big guy got in the back seat with him. The smaller guy got in the front seat, and they took off.
And which way did they go, Mr. Morley?
Straight down the street there. It turned right at that corner.
Mm-hmm. Did you happen to see the license number?
No, I thought of it, though. They didn't turn the car lights on and went by pretty fast, too. I couldn't get a good look at it.
Was it a California plate, do you know?
Oh, yeah, I noticed that much. That's about all, though.
What kind of a car was it?
Like I told you, a gray sedan, four-door. I couldn't tell the make. Fairly new car.
Well, did you notice anything outstanding about the car? Anything at all?
Well, I don't know. What do you mean, outstanding?
Well, special markings of any kind. Anything unusual. Maybe some of the accessories. Spotlight? Anything like that?
No, nothing I noticed. The rear bumper was bent out, I think. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure of it.
Rear bumper?
Yeah. I saw it when they drove off. They drove right past the place here.
Well, how about the men, sir? Can you describe them at all?
No. One was pretty tall and thin. The other one was smaller. About the same build on the thin side. They sure must have worked that guy over. He was all bent over. Looked like he was holding his stomach. Stains all down the front of his suit. On the sidewalk, too. I guess you saw that.
Yes, sir, we did. Now, you're sure that you've never seen any of these men before? Nothing familiar about them at all?
No, sir, not to me. I think if I saw him before, I'd know it. Oh, just a minute. It's probably the wife. Excuse me. I'll be right back.
Yeah, sure. What do you think, Joe?
Well, it doesn't look too good. Stains on the sidewalk down there. If it was just a robbery, why'd they take the guy with him?
Possibly might have recognized him.
Well, maybe you got some, but I hope you're wrong. If he can make the hood, it's a good chance they're not going to turn the man loose alive.
Sergeant.
Yeah.
It's your office on the phone. I want to talk to either one of you.
Well, I'll get it, Joe.
All right, thanks, Frank.
Phone straight back, Sergeant. End of the bar.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Look, Sergeant, I got to have something to quiet my nerves. How about you? You want a drink?
No, no, thanks. Besides the woman in that beauty shop next door, Mr. Morley, did you notice anyone else around and saw what went on?
No, as far as I know, Marie and I were the only ones. Just like I told you, when there's any trouble around this neighborhood, they get off the street quick.
You can't think of anything else that might give us a break on this, anything at all, now?
Wish I could. I think I told you just about everything. Sure feel lousy.
Joe.
Yeah.
I was talking to Harry.
Yeah.
181 found the car, gray sedan.
Where'd they find it?
Third and Bixel. It was empty. Keys still in it.
You sure it's the right car?
Bloodstains in the back seat.
7:18 p.m. Frank and I left the 797 Club, got in the car, and drove down to 3rd and Bixel, where the abandoned gray sedan had been located. It matched the same general description of the abductor's car, a four-door gray sedan, late model, with a damaged rear bumper. Dean Bergman from Leighton Prince dusted the car and succeeded in raising a half a dozen fingerprints, which he took back to the office for possible identification. The crime lab crew went over the car for additional physical evidence. The stains found on the back seat were identified as having been made by human blood. The white slip attached to the steering post showed the car was registered to a Kenneth L. Gorman at a Canal Street address. Before Frank and I left the scene, we got a report that approximately 20 minutes prior to the time the gray sedan had been located, another car had been stolen. It was a maroon, late model Club Coupe, license 7Tom7972. It had been taken in the same neighborhood, less than two blocks from where the gray sedan was abandoned. A broadcast and an APB was gotten out on it immediately. 8:05 p.m. After checking by the office, Frank and I drove down to check on the home address of the registered owner of the gray sedan, Kenneth L. Gorman. It was a white wood-frame cottage at the upper end of Canal Street. The woman who answered the door identified herself as Mrs. Elsie Gorman, a small, middle-aged woman, blue eyes, partially graying hair.
No, I'm sorry, officers. My husband isn't home right now.
Where is he, Mrs. Gorman, you know?
Well, he went downtown to see a friend of his, business appointment. Is it anything I can help you with?
Are you expecting your husband home pretty soon, ma'am?
Yes, I am. Matter of fact, he should have been home long before this. I don't know what's keeping him. Told me he was going downtown to collect some money a friend of his owed him. Said he'd be right back. I don't know what could be keeping him.
When did he leave the house, ma'am?
About 2:30, 3 o'clock this afternoon. It's almost 8:30 now. It could be he stopped to have a beer with his friend. He usually phones, though, if he's going to be late. I don't understand these men sometimes.
You and your husband own a car, Mrs. Gorman?
Yes, we do. My husband has it right now. Why?
What kind of a car is it, ma'am?
A 49 Chevy sedan.
Gray color, four-door?
Yes.
License number 7T7972?
Well, yes, I think that's it. Why, what's the matter? Something happened?
Nothing to get worried about, Mrs. Gorman. We located the car in the downtown area, parked on a side street. The keys were still in it. Thought we'd check on it.
Where was it parked?
Near 3rd and Bixel.
Well, that can't be right. This man my husband was going to see has his store on Alameda. It's on Alameda between 9th and 10th. No reason for Kenneth to drive the car way down on 3rd Street.
Possibly he might have had another business appointment down there, ma'am. Maybe something he didn't mention to you.
Well, I don't know. I suppose it is possible. You'd think he'd call, though. He usually does when he's going to be out late like this.
What about this man your husband was going to see, Miss Gorman? You happen to know who he is?
Yes, Fred Bernard. He's in the sheet metal business, has his shop on South Alameda. He owed my husband $300. My husband went down this afternoon to collect it.
Are you a friend of your husband's, is he?
Oh, yes, they're good friends. Fred and my husband have done business for years.
There wasn't any ill feeling between them about this debt?
No, no, of course not. It was just a bill for some materials. Why do you ask that?
Just routine questions, ma'am. Can you think of anyone at all who might have a quarrel with your husband? Somebody who has a grudge against him, maybe?
No. Why are you asking questions like that? Is there something wrong? Something you're not telling me about?
No, ma'am. It's just a routine check, Ms. Gorman. Nothing to worry about. We want to make sure everything's all right, that's all.
The way you talk, it isn't all right. It's far from right. And it's never gone this long without calling me. There must be something wrong.
No use getting yourself all worked up, ma'am. You admit your husband might have had another appointment after he left Bernard.
By the way, have you checked with Mr. Bernard yet, ma'am?
No, to tell you the truth, I haven't. I don't usually like to call my husband when he's out on business. I don't like to bother him. This is different, though. I think I'll call Fred Bernard right now.
That's a good idea. Do you mind if we wait, ma'am?
No, no, not at all. It'll only take me a minute. Excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know. Doesn't look too good, does it?
Car's abandoned, stains in the back seat. Man's late in getting home. It's all there.
Mm-hmm. Could be anything, couldn't it?
Doesn't look good.
Sergeant?
Yes, ma'am.
I just talked to Fred Bernard. He said my husband's been there and left.
What time did he leave Bernard's?
About 3:15, 3:30. Fred Bernard paid my husband the $300 he owed him, and my husband left. Fred told me my husband asked him if he wouldn't have a glass of beer with him, but Fred said no, he was busy.
Uh-huh.
So my husband said all right, he was going to have a beer at home. Told Fred he was going right home. That was at 3:15 this afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
There must be something wrong. I know it. It just isn't like my husband. He wouldn't leave the car like that. If he was late, at least he'd call me. Oh, would you excuse me again? I've had the dinner on the stove boiled away to nothing. I want to turn it off.
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead. I hope it works out all right. Seems like a nice woman.
Yes, she does.
Sure doesn't figure, does it? He's had plenty of time to get home. No reason why he shouldn't be here by this time.
Well, I can think of two.
Yeah?
An empty car and $300. We continued interviewing the wife of the missing man, Kenneth Gorman, and she told us that occasionally he did some drinking at neighborhood bars. She also told us that when her husband drank quite a bit in public places, he was over-friendly and he liked to brag and flash money. Mrs. Gorman got on the phone, contacted all their friends and relatives who happened to be home, but none of them had seen or heard from Mr. Gorman that day. Before Frank and I left, Mrs. Gorman gave us a complete description of her husband, the clothing he was wearing, and also a recent photograph of him. We called Fred Bernard, the friend of the missing man, the last known person to see him, and told him that we'd like to talk to him. He told us that he was working late, getting out a rush order, and that we could find him in his shop. 9.05 p.m., we located Bernard at his shop on South Alameda.
Won't take long, will it? An awful rush tonight.
Won't take long, sir. Did Mr. Gorman give you any idea of where he was going when he left here this afternoon?
No, just like I told his wife on the phone. I paid him the money I owed him. He asked me if I wanted a beer, took a rain check on it, and he left. Went right out that door there.
You seem worried about anything, Mr. Gorman?
No, not that I could see. Seemed all right to me.
Had he been drinking, do you know?
No, couldn't say. If he was, I couldn't smell it on him.
Is there anything unusual about him at all? Anything out of the ordinary?
No, same old Ken. Pretty good mood when I paid him. $300 cash. He's all dressed up. I guess you might call that unusual.
How do you mean unusual?
Well, Ken's like me. Working man, not much of a dresser. Usually find him in working clothes. I think it's the second time I ever saw him in a suit. A new one, too. Looked nice on him.
He didn't give you any indication at all where he might be going, did he?
No, he just collected his money and went out. I thought maybe he was going home. Now, what did Miss Gorman tell you? Didn't you have any idea where he is?
No, sir. She told us he came down here to collect some money. She expected him right home. We're not trying to be nosy, Mr. Bernard, but how do Gorman and his wife get along? Are they pretty happy together?
Yes, I guess you might say that. Get along as well as you could expect them to.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing. Ken's a... Well, he's a fellow who likes his nightlife. Wife's just the opposite, quiet type. Almost left him once. Guess they're getting along pretty good now, though.
Why'd she almost leave him? Would you happen to know?
Well, she found him out with a girlfriend. Matter of fact, she caught him at a terrible row. Didn't understand any of it. The girlfriend wasn't much at all. Real lush.
You know the girl's name?
Yeah, I met her twice. Name's Elaine something. She works at a cafe 3 blocks from here. Real lush. She sure took it.
You know if Gorman's been seeing her lately?
Well, he says he hasn't been. I don't know. I never can tell when he's drinking, though. Didn't his wife mention the girl at all? No, I guess she wouldn't. It's been a terrible thing for her when she found out. Terrible.
How long ago was all this, Mr. Bernard? I mean, this affair Gorman had with this girl.
Oh, 6 weeks. Maybe 2 months ago, just about that. I tell you, it was the queerest thing I ever saw. Ken has a nice, quiet wife of his at home, and they get along fine together, never fought, never quarreled. And he picks up with his girl, Elaine. Sure different.
How's that?
Real mean girl. Two of them fought all the time.
9:40 p.m. We left Fred Bernard at his shop, drove to the restaurant where Gorman's girlfriend reportedly was working as a waitress, and we checked with the manager. He told us a girl by the name of Elaine Summerall had been employed there, but that she'd been fired for drinking on the job. He also told us that he had reason to suspect that Elaine Summerall was not the girl's true name. We showed the cafe manager a picture of Mr. Gorman, and he identified it. He said Gorman had been in that afternoon inquiring about the Summerall girl. Gorman had asked for the girl's forwarding address, but the manager told us that he'd thrown it away. We left our card with him and asked him to contact us immediately in the event the girl returned. 10:18 p.m. We drove back to the city hall and checked in at the office. We ran the name and description of the Summerall girl through R&I
and they told us they had a Summerall girl in the files who answered the description. Elaine Summerall, alias Elaine O'Donnell, alias Elaine Shellman. There were warrants out on her for forgery, 3 counts, and grand theft merchandise. We signed out of the office, went across the street to the Federal Cafe, and had a sandwich and a cup of coffee.
Wouldn't look so rough if it wasn't for the stains they found in the back seat of that car.
It's hard to get around. It points to more than robbery, doesn't it?
Yeah, Mo sure strikes me pretty funny, pulling the man off the street like that.
Must be either hard up or crazy, huh?
Federal Cafe. This man, Frank?
Yeah.
Phone.
Right, thank you. I'll be right back.
Thank you.
Yeah, Friday talking. Yeah, Glenn. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, when? How long ago? Yeah, I see, huh? There wasn't, huh? Yeah, we'll roll on it right now. Tell them we're on our way in, will you? Yeah, right. Thanks, Glenn. Bye.
Yeah?
Chandler. They just found the maroon coupe, the one stolen in the neighborhood where Gorman's was dropped.
Where'd they find it?
Picked it off going up through Lancaster, sheriff's deputies.
Does it look good on our job?
Well, there were 2 men in the car. One of them had a knife, bloodstains on their clothes all over the inside of the car.
How's it figure?
It doesn't. Not a scratch on either one of them. Monday, March 18th, 10:40 p.m. After we received the report that the stolen maroon coupe, along with the 2 suspects, had been recovered north of the city in the town of Lancaster, Frank and I stopped by the record bureau and checked to see if there was a make on either one of the suspects. The first one, Paul Mike, white male American, 32 years, 5'11", 150 pounds, brown hair, brown eyes. He had a long felony record, including burglary and robbery. He'd served sentences in both San Quentin and Folsom, and there was a warrant on him for violation of parole. The second suspect, Floyd Compton, white male American, 34 years, 5'8", 135 pounds, black hair, brown eyes. His record included arrests on suspicion of burglary, 4 grand theft merchandise, and 3 drunk arrests. He was a petty thief known to us as a shoplifter. He'd never served time in a penitentiary. 10:55 p.m., Frank and I, with identifying photographs of the 2 suspects, left the city and drove north. We checked in at the Lancaster Sheriff's Office substation. Captain Walker Hannon briefed us on the details of the arrest, and then he showed us back to the cell block where the 2 suspects were being held. He told us neither of the men had been questioned because the officers there weren't acquainted with the facts of the case. He also informed us both men had been separated from the time of their apprehension. Captain Hannon had Paul Mike taken from his cell, and he was brought to the captain's office where we started to question him. It went slow.
I don't think I understand you, Sergeant. What's all the excitement about?
You can answer that better than we can, Mike.
Answer what? What do you want to know?
The car, Mike. The bloodstains.
What about them?
A little unusual, wouldn't you say?
I don't know anything about any bloodstains. If they're in the car, I don't know how they got there. It isn't my car.
Yeah, we know that. What about the stains in your clothes?
Well, I don't know. We were sitting in the car there. Maybe the stains rubbed off on us. You got a cigarette?
Only one thing wrong with that story, Mike. The stains were on the wrong side of you.
All right, so I had a fight. Got hit in the nose. What's that, a law against it?
I got a hunch, Mike.
Yeah?
You're lying. Where'd you get that car?
I told you where I got it. Me and Kaufman bummed a ride on San Fernando Road. This spook came along in the maroon coupe and gave us a ride. A couple of miles this side of Lancaster, he stopped the car and got out. Said he'd be right back. Walked right out into the desert.
That right?
Yeah. Waited for him to come back. Waited a long time. Honked the horn, yelled for him. We finally gave it up. Matter of fact, Kaufman and me got a little scared. Thought maybe the car was stolen. I didn't want to get caught in a hot car. I'm an ex-con. I couldn't stand the heat. It's the truth. I'm squaring with you.
What about the money, Mike?
Huh?
The money. They booked you in with $133 in your pocket.
Oh, yeah. I got luck in a crap game last night. I was pulling out.
How about the pocket knife? Blood stains on it? You win that in a crap game, too?
No, matter of fact, it was in the car. Found it right there on the seat.
Big coincidence, Mike. Somebody leaves you a car, blood stains on the inside, stains on you and your partner. Pocket knife, stains on that, too. You're on parole, leaving town without notice, driving a car you're not supposed to be driving, pocket full of money you got no way of accounting for. Face it, Mike.
What do you mean?
Face it, you're dead. Flag on your card now. Parole officer wants you. Now, how about the truth?
What do you mean, the truth? I told it to you.
Right, now, come on. Let's save time for all of us, Mike. You've been around long enough. You've graduated. You know we're not going to buy that line.
What line? How can I explain things to you? You won't believe me. I told you nothing but the truth since I walked into this room. You won't believe me. You got a cigarette?
How do you account for the blood in your shirt?
I told you. I had a fight. Guy hit me in the nose. Happened right down there in L.A. You can check it.
Where did it happen?
Bar. Downtown.
There's a lot of bars downtown.
Place on South Pierce. I go there sometimes.
What's the name of it?
797 Club. Ask anybody in there.
You said it happened tonight?
Yeah, about 8 o'clock. Just before we cut out. Guy hit me right on the nose. Real rough one. You got a cigarette?
What time did you say you had that fight?
About 8 o'clock.
You sure of that?
Sure, why?
You're not doing too well, Mike.
Now what's the matter?
We were at the 797 Club tonight. We talked to the owner.
So what?
We were there at 6:35. He locked the place up and went home at 6:45. He was sick.
797 Club?
Yeah, that's right. Now, where were you at the time of the robbery?
I want an attorney. I'm not saying anything else. Trying to frame me. Take me back to my cell.
Any way you want it, Mike. Let's go.
What's the use telling the truth? They don't believe you. How about that cigarette?
Captain, would you have the jailer return this one and bring in Captain? How about that? He couldn't tell the truth if it helped him. Hope we do better with his partner.
Well, we're going to have to. We know we're on the right track. The big question is, what have they done with Gorman?
Big guess. 1,000 places they could have dumped him between here and L.A.
Well, I hate to make book on his chances. Everything points to a killing, doesn't it?
Mike looks like the one who could handle it.
Come on in, Tom. Over here. Sit down.
Yeah.
My name's Friday. This is Smith, my partner.
Hi.
Branched out of your class, haven't you, Compton? Running in the big time here?
What do you mean? We haven't done anything. Robbery, kidnapping, grand theft auto. You're moving pretty fast.
Didn't Mike tell you? This guy gave us a ride. He stopped the car and walked away. We didn't steal the car. Thought the guy was lost. We drove in here to get help.
Let's take it from the top. Where'd you spend the day? Who were you with?
Mike. He stayed overnight with me. Both slept till about 2 o'clock, got something to eat, went to a show. Got out about 5.
What'd you do then?
Went to this bar downtown. Didn't Mike tell you?
You were with him, weren't you?
Sure I was with him. He'll tell you that.
He did. And you didn't do anything wrong, did you?
No.
Then what are you worrying about? Let's forget Mike now. You level with us, will you?
You're getting it straight. I didn't do anything.
Mike says he can't stand another beef, can't afford it. He's too up right now.
I know that.
But we believe him, Compton. Mike's done too much time. He couldn't make another trip easy. We think he's telling us the truth.
Well, so am I. What are you getting at, anyway?
All right, now, let's get on the bandwagon while you can. We don't need you, Compton. If you talk or not, it doesn't make any difference.
Just a minute. Can I talk to Mike?
All right, we'll give it a try. Frank, you want to ask him?
Yeah, okay. Be right back.
Now, let's pick up where we left off. The bloodstains on your clothes, stains inside the car. Where'd they come from?
Mike told you, didn't he?
Yeah, you tell us.
What for? Why can't I wait till Mike gets here?
All right, what about the money? You want to explain about that?
Nothing to explain. I saved it.
What kind of work do you do?
Not jobs around town, any place I can find them.
You say you got up at 2, you had something to eat, you went to a show, and you got out about 5 o'clock. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
When did you go to the 797 Club?
Right after the show, about 5 o'clock.
How long did you stay there?
About an hour, till about 6 o'clock.
Anything unusual happen when you were in the bar?
What do you mean?
Anything unusual, anything out of the ordinary?
Oh, Mike and me sat there, talked, had some drinks. Pretty dead place. Decided to take off for Reno. Mike's got a friend up there, a good friend. Thought maybe he'd get the both of us jobs.
Compton?
Yeah? Where's Mike?
I told him you wanted to talk to him. He said he didn't want to see you. They took him out to feed him. Told me to tell you he'd see you in court.
What do you mean, see me in court?
I think you got it, Compton. We told you we didn't need you. Come on, we're tired. We're going to lock you up.
What'd he say? What'd he tell you?
Now, look, fella, we're tired. You wanted to go the hard way. All right, you'll get the answers in court.
Well, what did he say? What'd he tell you?
Come on, let's go. You should have known better. Mike's not going to ride your beef for you.
He was in it all the way. It's his idea and it's his beef, not mine. I argued with him. I know he shouldn't have gone along. Crazy.
Yeah, come on.
It's the truth. The whole thing's Mike's. It's his knife, too. Met the guy in some bar and he was real high, talking about some dame he was looking for, a girlfriend. Guy bought us a couple of drinks, had a big roll of bills. Mike claimed the whole thing.
Yeah?
Yeah, he wanted to roll the guy. He left, got in the guy's car and drove with him way to our town. Mike was driving. I didn't know what he was heading for. All of a sudden, the guy says he wants another drink. Mike didn't want to stop, but he was making a racket. Finally pulled up by the 797 Club. We got out. Then the guy changes his mind. He wants to go home. Mike tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't listen. Mike pulled a knife and cut him. Then he slugged the guy, and the two of us pushed him in the car and took off.
Where'd you go from there?
We cruised around till we found another car, maroon coupe. We clouded that one, dumped the gray sedan, and took off up this way.
Right.
Look, it's the truth. I'll even tell you about the guy. What happened to him? You got flashlights in your car?
The man's still alive?
I don't know. He was when we left him.
1:45 a.m. The Lancaster Sheriff Substation contacted the local emergency ambulance, and they were instructed to follow our car. Along with the suspect, Floyd Compton, Frank and I got in the car and headed south, following his directions. After several tries at locating the spot where Mike and Compton supposedly left their victim, we finally found where they'd parked their car on the side of the road. We got out and Compton led us back across a stretch of sand to a thick clump of sagebrush about 300 yards off the highway. The victim, Kenneth Gorman, was lying face down. His hands and feet were tied together. It was fairly evident that he'd lost a good deal of blood and that he was in a state of severe shock. He was placed on a stretcher and placed in the ambulance.
All right, Compton, that's it. Let's go.
Be real tough. I'm sure glad he ain't dead.
Yeah, sure. Come on.
Where are we going now?
Back to the sheriff's office. Want to take your statement.
Okay with me. Just one thing I want. One more thing.
Yeah?
That lousy Mike. I want to be there. I want to see him.
How's that?
I'm trying to load this thing on me. I want to see his face when you tell him. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, neither can we.
¶¶
just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On July 12th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 84, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Paul Mike and his accomplice, Floyd Compton, were filed on for violation of Section 209 of the Penal Code, kidnapping for the purpose of robbery, and Section 211 of the Penal Code, robbery in the first degree. They were also filed on for one count of grand theft auto. They were tried and convicted and received sentences as prescribed by law. Kidnapping for the purpose of robbery, where bodily harm is inflicted, is punishable by the death sentence or life imprisonment without possibility of parole. Robbery is punishable by imprisonment from 5 years to life. Grand theft auto is punishable by a prison term of not less than one, nor more than 10 years. The victim, Kenneth Gorman, finally recovered after more than 3 months in the hospital.
Ladies and gentlemen, next week, Dragnet presents a trilogy. Three documented case histories of vital importance to all of us. This trio of authentic stories is both tragic and terrifying. Please try to hear Dragnet next week when we present our trilogy.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police, W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors, Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Frazier. Heard tonight were Vic Perrin, Virginia Gregg, Sam Edwards. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now read Dragnet every day on the comic page of your favorite newspaper. Please consult your local daily paper. King Size Fatima has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Welcome back. The next week's episode, The Big Trio, really sounds like it's going to be interesting. Hopefully my voice will be better by then. A few things here. I had to love the police interrogation method. And they did a really good job building up this little drama where they showed how they how they're really able when you're dealing with a gang of crooks as opposed to just one crook, and you're not dealing with professional crooks, how they're able to play one off against the other to get the information. The other thing is the when they were questioning the victim's wife, basically they kept saying it's routine, and you know, as I was listening to this, I was like, you know, this, she doesn't really feel routine to her, but I think it's an awkward circumstance. They really and I think there's some. One thing that they definitely portray here is there's some sensitivity to this idea that we don't want to cause undue alarm or undue panic when we don't know what all the facts are. But just the very nature of the questions, it's going to cause some anxiety regardless of how it's asked. All right, well, we got a few more comments, and then we'll wrap it up. This one, again, comes from Podcast Alley, podcastalley.radiodragnet.com. From Chris Turner, Adam, I love the show. I listen to it while I'm working out at the gym. Thanks for all your hard work and your commitment. Well, thanks a lot, Chris. I love to listen to old-time radio when I'm working out, and I've begun in the last month or so to integrate a lot of it into kind of the boring spaces of doing nothingness. And it is definitely livens things up. Got this comment from Michael Galea in Calistoga. Hi, Adam. Here's my vote for Dragnet for the month of January. Your podcasts are great. Thank you so much. And last comment, this one comes on the blog from Daniel. Like what you do, hope you will add more shows. Well, we'll continue to add one new show a week. I was going to go ahead and record our bonus episode for this quarter, but I think for reasons that will be obvious to anybody who's been listening, I'll go ahead and put that off till next week. We'll be back with the big trio. Join us then. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.